All I hear is patience. All I have are missed bank payments. It won't be this bleak forever. That's Spanish Love Songs. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. A bad, bad weekend for Toronto sports fans. Received an unconventional epilogue on Sunday. The Blue Jays actually managed to score some runs. Some of them were even earned runs that they scored themselves, only to lose 11-8 to a Nationals team that handed them the league's worst starter statistically on Friday, handed them 9 unearned runs because of 7 errors over Saturday and Sunday, to which the Jays took all of that and said, thanks, but we'll just take a single win. They quite literally looked a gift horse in the mouth. Not actually literally, but the Nationals were like, here, take a series. Things are rough. You guys could use a couple of W's. You could use your bats going. Here's Patrick Corbin, who everyone has lit up and hasn't missed a bat all year. And the Jays get 3 runs off of him. And that's it. They hand them a win on Saturday. The Jays actually graciously take that one. And then on Sunday, the Nationals do everything they possibly can to give the Jays a nice early cushion for Alek Manoah's first start back in the majors. The Jays say, no, thank you. We'll hand that one back. 11-8 loss. So that's an 11-8 loss. That's a 2-1 series loss. That's the 4th consecutive series loss for the Blue Jays, who are now last in the American League East. It's way too early to look at playoff standings, but they're 4 games out of a playoff spot at this early juncture. They've been outscored by 37 runs. They don't have a sensible option for the 5th starting position. They have the worst bullpen in baseball statistically. They are hitting 29th best with runners in scoring position in all of baseball. They actually climbed all the way to 24th in runs per game over the weekend. There is no obvious fix right at this moment, and it is 2 weeks before you see a bad team again. That Spanish Love Song song that I quoted off the top has a refrain that it won't be this bleak forever. Yeah, right. Tough weekend for Toronto sports. Keegan Matheson of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com, was in Washington for it. He's got a little smirk on his face. I think he's glad I'm a little fired up and negative today. Keegan, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Normally, I'm the angry one. This is a nice opportunity for me to rebrand. You know, I'm going to be the serene, calming influence, which won't be natural to me. But it's been an interesting week, Blake. The trip to Washington, my God. Like you said, they had every opportunity. It was ugly. It was ugly in ways that are more worrying than it was a few days ago. Not going well. Not going well. I know it's early May, but early doesn't exist in my world. All these games still count. And a lot of these problems that you're getting to are indicative of deeper, more foundational issues. It's worrying.
And it's early for the 2024 season. It is not early for this era of the Toronto Blue Jays. And we've talked about it all year to start here. There should be a sense of urgency with this club, with this season, as, you know, your starting pitchers get into further into their 30s. Some of your key free agent signings over the years getting a little closer to the end of those deals, or the parts of those deals where they're just not going to return value. And then, of course, Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a year and change now from potentially hitting free agency, there should be a real urgency here. Now, we're talking, Keegan, on a day where the Toronto Maple Leafs are cleaning out their lockers because they're now 1-8 in playoff series in this era. It is not quite that bleak yet, but the Blue Jays haven't won a playoff game in this era since transitioning from 2016 through that quick rebuild into what was supposed to be the next core window of sustained competition. They're not there. So yes, it is early for 2024, but it is not early in the big picture of things for this ball club, for this organization. In terms of how this weekend went, and it went not as poorly as possible. I guess they could have squandered Saturday's game as well, but Friday was very winnable. Sunday was very winnable. This should have been a sweep against a bad team if you're a serious baseball club. And we've also seen a shift in tone on the team side as well, where just last week we were here and John Schneider was talking about patience, right? Like I said it off the top. That has been the refrain from the front office over the last couple of years through the offseason. That has been John Schneider talking about his hitters in the early part of this year. And then on Friday, he said, well, you know, the time is now. I joked in your mentions. He sang John Cena's theme song lyrics. Time is up, time is now, over and over again. But he did say that. And then this is what happened on the weekend. So look, we've seen the sense of urgency change, certainly in the tone we're all talking about the team, and now John Schneider a little bit. What is this sense of urgency going to look like over the next couple of weeks? Because it's not as if, like, that Chicago White Sox series 2 weeks from now is miles and miles and miles in the future. There is no reprieve here schedule-wise.
It has to be obvious, and it has to be something that you can see and touch and feel, because this is exhausting. I know the Blue Jays have not been in this area or this theme as long as the Maple Leafs, but it's pretty exhausting because they play every day. You can't escape it. I don't care how many people say I'm done watching the team. You're probably not. You're probably watching them every night. You can't escape this. And the brand of baseball the Blue Jays are playing right now is so frustrating. It is so exhausting. There are ways to be a few games under 500 and still be exciting, where you have things to point to, you have young players, you have optimism, you have hope. What the Blue Jays are doing right now is very tiring. And I do sense that apathy, that frustration setting in from people. And you understand that. My God, you understand that. You need to see something change. I really like that John Schneider came out and said the time is now. Like, this is not a matter of it's going to happen, it's going to come. And I know he's said that a million times, and I know it because I'm asking the question. I'm the guy that's annoying these people asking all the time, are you going to change the lineup? Is something going to change? When's Vladdy going to hit? When the hell is Bo going to hit? I know these things are repeated because I'm the one asking about it. And it's been the same message over and over and over. And even though John Schneider can say that publicly and say something much different in the clubhouse, this is still the voice of the team. This is who fans look to. And I think it was important. I honestly think it was very good that John Schneider did that this weekend. His tone did shift very quickly. Maybe Thursday was an interesting day in his world. I'm not sure, but it changed very quickly. Now the play needs to back that up. The play needs to follow that. Now, this isn't hockey. You can't go punch a guy. I don't know how obviously you show it right away, but there needs to be that urgency. Something needs to look different. I think that's the problem with all of this, Blake. Nothing's looked different. Something has to look visibly different. I'm not talking about someone's cutter moving an extra inch. I'm talking about something that my mom sitting at home watching games can look at and say, oh, that's changed. That guy's a little more fired up than usual. That looks different than a week ago. Something that to a casual fan, which is 95% of fans, can see. We haven't seen that yet. Goodness, we didn't see it yesterday. That was a dreadful baseball game. Even the Nationals, nothing was good about that game. It was a bad baseball game. They're not all going to be great. But we've got to see something change. We've been saying this for a long time, but it has to happen very soon.
Yeah, and look, we're dealing with a stretch of play here where there's four off days in a two-week stretch, which can be helpful for things like, yeah, gets an extra day of rest, and you know, your bullpen, we'll get into the bullpen stuff, but lost my mind a little bit. I know I'm not the only person on Sunday where the conversation is like, well, the bullpen's so thin. It's game three after an off day with an off day ahead, and you had a nine-man bullpen for two of those days. How do you have a thin bullpen? Anyway, look, all those off days also provide days for rumination. You just sit there and marinate in it and think about possibilities. And look, some of these changes could come on the intensity level, they moved Bo Bichette in the batting order in a move that isn't going to get him going because of the move, but try something a little different. And there are, of course, always the tweets that we're getting, the texts that we're getting into the 590-590 text line, about bigger picture changes. And I'm sure you kind of hinted at maybe Thursday was an interesting day in John Schneider's world. I'm sure it's been an interesting couple of weeks in Ross Atkins' world. If you wanted to do something really big, there is the cover this week of the Toronto Maple Leafs got eliminated again. They're clearing out their lockers today and have a mysteriously scheduled delayed front office press conference on Thursday. There's some cover here if you wanted to do something bigger. It's going to be an interesting week. It's going to be an interesting time until performance turns around. Let's get into some of the specifics of the weekend. Alek Manoah returned yesterday, and pitching injuries are going to happen. You can never have enough pitching depth. Alek Manoah entered spring training probably fifth on the starting pitching depth chart, and then by the time the season started, he was maybe ninth. And Bowden Francis got moved to the bullpen and then got hurt. Yariel Rodriguez made his debut, looked pretty cool, got hurt. Wes Parsons, no longer in this organization. Mitch White, he got DFA'd yesterday. Maybe there's your source of pitching depth. You claim Mitch White back off waivers and just pocket the cash that the Giants paid you. But Alek Manoah was required to start on Sunday. The Jays could have managed a four-man bullpen for a couple weeks here using all of these extra off days. They decided, no, Alek Manoah's 30-day rehab window was almost up, and we could use him more at the major league level than we could, you know, optioning him to AAA and continuing to build back up. The results were not great. He gave up a couple of home runs, walked a couple guys, obviously had a big hand in the Jays giving up 11 runs in that game. We can get into some of the specifics, but Keegan, the decision to put Manoah in that position in the first place to say, hey, we don't want to do the four-man rotation. It's too much on those guys. We had to ask them to do it last year. We don't want to do it again. That much I can understand, but putting, if we're just focused on Manoah and what is going to lead him back to having some level of success, what did you make of that decision off of just one good rehab start and the couple rehab starts before that were not good? It seemed like, look, the Nationals as a landing spot versus if they needed to dust them off versus the Twins or Phillies or something like that, I can get what you were thinking there, but it seemed a little quick given what you and I saw in those AAA games.
Yeah, I didn't like it, but I also don't know what the other option is.
Yeah.
Paolo Espino at this point, all of those names you're listing off the top, like, it's amazing how fast this happens. You know, bringing back Mitch White is a genuine option to improve this team at this point. Remind me next February to just not cover spring training. It's not that serious. It's going to change. And the Blue Jays pitching depth in late February, early March, I liked it. I really thought it was good. I thought it was much better than in recent years. I thought that Ricky Tiedemann at this point would be starting to push. I thought that Chad Dallas might be better than he looks in AAA. Like, nothing's working. Nothing in terms of pitching depth in the rotation has worked. It has been bad, 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 bad. And that leads you to a move, I think, that was pretty much out of necessity. Now, if Alek Manoah had walked six guys in his last AAA start instead of striking out 12, yeah, you find a way around it. You bullpen it. You tell Trevor Richards to pitch until he cries. I don't know. But it was in a spot where they kind of had to. And that's not what you want to be doing with Alek Manoah right now, because for all of the failures he's had over these last 16 months, this organization still needs to support the guy. They still need to put him in a position to succeed. And what does that look like? It has to be stable. I think that's really my big takeaway. He needs to have some stability in this. And that's why, even though it looked terrible yesterday, it didn't look good. I don't think you can bounce him down and yank him up and start that again. At what point is it a last chance or a time where you have to say, okay, pitch, show who you are. It's either going to work this time or not. The Jays just don't have the depth beyond him to field that. You wish that Bowden Francis was healthy. I think Bowden Francis is a better starter than he showed to start this year. I still believe in Bowden Francis. But this is just where the Blue Jays are right now. And if you look out there, it's impossible to find starting pitching depth. You're looking to try and scrape away some other organization's version of Paolo Espino on the waiver wire. That's what you're hoping for at this point. And I was thinking about this yesterday, Blake, because I don't have any good hobbies anymore. And I think this really shows that the Blue Jays need to develop their own starting pitching depth. Chad Dallas is kind of a wave of that. Ricky Tiedemann can be. But looking through all of these names, the Parsons, the Whites, on and on, these are guys you're grabbing externally. When guys are available who can start baseball games, sometimes there's a reason they are available. You need to start developing pitchers who can be in that AAA group and support you. Otherwise, you're looking down the line to an Adam Macko who's in AA and not ready. It's just not there. And because of that, Alek Manoah gets put into a spot and gets rocked. And we're right back to square one. I don't know what's changed.
It's a tough one. And yeah, I'm with you on the pitching depth. That's obviously been an organizational failure at the farm system level for, you know, this front office has been in control for a little while here. And yes, they've made some win now trades that sent pitchers out the door, but it's not as if any of those guys have really popped at the major league level either. There just haven't been a lot of good pitch. And then look, there are bright spots way further down the line. Fernando Perez continues to look good. Kendry Rojas, et cetera. Adam Macko is having a nice year, but you know, Macko is maybe a late 2024 consideration. Those other guys are like after this wave of guys. They're the next wave, and the current wave is fairly bleak. So Manoah's forced to start in this one. He ends up giving you four innings, seven runs, six of them earned, six hits. Two of those were home runs. One of them was the cookie to end all cookies, middle. The other one, who knows, maybe you could say, okay, made a nice play on a tougher pitch. Six strikeouts, four walks, and the hit by pitch that could have been a fifth walk because it was a ball four that hit a guy. After the game, there were two primary comments that stood out. John Schneider said he was as good as I've seen him stuff-wise in a while. Our pitching metrics and the movement on the slider and things like that would disagree. They would say, hey, maybe it was a tiny bit better than last year, but nowhere near 2022, nowhere near 2021, where that slider looked like a legitimate all-star level weapon. And then Manoah himself talked about nibbling too much, trying to be too fine at the edges, I think specifically with that two-seam fastball, said, I'm not going to be Greg Maddux. I just need to attack guys. He only had eight swing and miss, and almost all of those came in the second inning where he had a couple of punch outs. When you look at all of those numbers, when you hear those quotes afterward, what do you make of that? Do you think Schneider and Manoah are, like, obviously Schneider has to play the PR game here a little bit. I didn't see it outside. And look, I watched that Triple A start where he had 12 strikeouts. The slider looked awesome in it, especially to lefties. But the fastball had trouble locating there as well, especially up in the zone. He could locate it right left. But even yesterday, Alejandro Kirk doing him some favors with the north-south locations and framing there, and he still couldn't get it. What do you make of that? And yes, acknowledging that he's going to stay here, what are the next steps for you?
When I heard Alec talk after the game, it sounded pretty similar to a lot of the conversations we had last year, and I don't think that's a good thing. Now, John Schneider said it was control. Manoah said it wasn't exactly control. It was trying to be too fine, which I'd consider a subgenre of control. We're getting a bit into the dictionary there, but it's the same thing. And Manoah said he was trying to be too fine. He's not Greg Maddux. Well, dude, I'm not Ryan Gosling. I know you're not Greg Maddux. That's not how it's going to work. With Manoah, yes, he needs to pound that zone. You saw in the first inning with the run walked in, there were eight balls and nine pitches. When he loses it, he does lose it for these little stretches. When he's looking for it, you see him falling off the mound, trying to find that delivery. And it's all about the delivery for Manoah. A guy his size, just from a very baseline standpoint, there's a lot of body involved. This is not Yusei Kikuchi, who's a smaller built pitcher, a smaller body going through a delivery. Alec Manoah is just a bigger dude. The realities of his delivery are different. And when you lose a couple of inches on that delivery, it can be hard to get back. But when I hear Manoah say that after the game, that he was being a little bit too fine, trying to be too perfect, I wrote that story 10 times last year. I could have copy-pasted one of my stories from last year with a lot of those quotes. So it's not something you want to hear again. That's kind of the theme of these teams, Blake, is we're hearing the same thing again and again. Mm-hmm. We are seeing the same thing again and again. So for Manoah, it's better he's at least realizing that, of course. He's going to get another opportunity, but now he needs to succeed in the zone. We keep hearing about Manoah's stuff, how good it is. Yes, it's good. He's not throwing 102. He's throwing 94, 95. The slider does look good. His stuff looks good, but he's not going to overwhelm you. And I think more than anything, Blake, and I wrote a bit about this, but it's about trying to brand who Alec Manoah can be now. He's not going to be 2022 Manoah. That's not going to happen. Blue Jays don't need that to happen. They have Berríos, Kikuchi, Bassett, Gausman. Those guys are okay. What they need is a boring number five pitcher. They need him to be boring. And in the landscape of modern pitching, boring is a beautiful thing. It's a great thing. Go out there and chew through some innings. They don't need to be wonderful, but chew through them. Get through that sixth inning. The bar is pretty low for what the Blue Jays need from him to deem it successful at this point right now. He's going to get some more opportunities, again, out of necessity as much as anything else. But the Blue Jays need something more. They need, again, like we talked about earlier in bigger terms, Blake, they need something different. We need to see something different. Yesterday looked a lot like 2023. And then after the game, it sounded a lot like 2023. So yes, there are some things, if you really parse down and get fine, that you can take optimism from. But this is the big leagues. This is not double A. You're not looking for reasons for optimism. You're looking for wins. Those are what count. Even on May 5th, the wins count. And yesterday was pretty rough. That was not a good day in any way.
Yeah, look, if you give up three runs over five innings, no one is doing backflips. No one is saying that was an amazing start. That would give you a 5.40 ERA. The Jays would take that from Alek Manoah right now, no matter what. And sure, they'd love a sixth inning out of that. Even, hey, who knows, four over six. Maybe that's not enough with this offense, but three over five. Like, they would take that. If you could be,
absolutely,
if you could approximate Jordan Lyles, who has thrown 175 to 180 innings each of the last 3 years with an ERA around five, they would take that. They just need someone to man that fifth spot and get it over to a bullpen that we thought would be pretty good. So let's transition there, because your newsletter at BlueJays.com, at MLB.com on the weekend, got into some of the issues that the bullpen is having as well. Because, yeah, the Jays have struggled to score a lot of runs in games. That was a big talking point. They had the 20-game streak, et cetera. I'm not saying yesterday fixed everything when they scored eight runs, especially because the Nationals were like, here, have some runs. We're going to throw the ball over first base once an inning until you guys score some. But the Jays have, and I think I'll say quietly, not because the numbers don't stand out, but because so much of the focus has been on the offense, the Jays have the worst bullpen in baseball. And your newsletter laid out some of the numbers underlying that, and then things got worse yesterday. They're now 30th in bullpen ERA. Man, some of this has been injury. Like, Romano was out to start the season. Chad Green's out right now. But really, like, Jordan Romano's got an ERA over four. Trevor Richards has been fine. But Tim Mesa, Henesy Cabrera, especially Eric Swanson, they have all been bad. Let's start with Swanson as kind of, I guess, an avatar for this bullpen. Yeah. What do you make of the struggles that he's had and the fact that, you know, he alone is not why the Jays are 30th in bullpen ERA, but he does seem like, an avatar for what's going on back there.
Yeah, it's been bad for Swanson. And I think he's the most important piece of all of this. Now, Jimmy Garcia has been the best piece in all of this. But when you look at Swanson, if you have him succeeding, pitching like he can, which is a very good reliever, alongside Romano and alongside Garcia, that gives you coverage over that 7-8-9. When you have Green in there as well, a guy can even be off for a day, and you have that 7-8-9. That allows you to close out or keep those close games close when the score is tight. Now, any bullpen can handle, should be able to handle a five-run lead, a five-run deficit, and get through. But it's about these tight games. And when the Blue Jays aren't scoring much, every game's a tight game. You need Swanson to expand that group. And John Schneider said he might have been tipping the next day, reading between the lines. It sounds like he was. But there's also some locating as well. When that splitter is up over the heart of the plate, it is 84-mile-an-hour fastball. A guy is going to crush that. It's going to get crushed. Swanson can be so good. What he's gone through the last couple of months with his son in spring training, then with an injury, I want to give him some grace, and I think he deserves that. But having him back, when he can get back to the right level, is what's going to fix all of this. You can figure out who's going to be in there among the Pearsons and the Littles and who's going to be that number eight, number nine guy. You can figure that out. It'll change all year. Zach Pop's another. But you need your core three or four guys. Having Chad Green back will be a big part of that as well. But it just, I think it's really getting back, Blake, to the position this team's putting itself in. It reminds me almost in a way, let's go back, last time we talked about that Vladdy error when he dropped the ball in Kansas City. That's something where if you are the number six scoring team in baseball, that probably doesn't matter. It's something that Vladdy jokes about after the game because they just won 7-4. A lot of these issues for the Blue Jays now are magnified because every game is 3-2, 4-2. So when a mistake does happen, it doesn't just change the score. It changes a win into a loss. It ruins the day. And this bullpen is at a point right now where when it stumbles, even if just one reliever stumbles, you lose. Game over. Yesterday, all four relievers allowed a run. You lose. And it gets magnified. This is right now, by ERA, by a lot of metrics, the worst or one of the worst bullpens in baseball. They need it to be a top 10 bullpen. It should be a top 10 bullpen. And I didn't see this coming, Blake. This is not a time to pretend I sounded smart. This is shocking to me. I thought this would be a very good group. This one's way out of left field. This is the surprise of the season for me, honestly, at this point.
Yeah, I think Mays is the one guy that I saw some warning signs in the underlying stuff heading into this season. But Swanson, everything looked good. And like you said, yeah, there's a little bit of tipping. His glove positioning was different yesterday, so maybe he saw something in how he was hiding the ball or something like that. But if you're, whether you're tipping or not, a splitter that doesn't dive down and just hangs up in the zone is going to get hammered a lot of the time. It's a tough one, and no disrespect to Joel Kunal, who they picked up from the Astros on the weekend for cash. They used that Wes Parsons and Mitch White cash and added another guy to the 40-man with options. He doesn't strike anyone out at AAA, so I don't think that's the solution either. I will mention, because I have been negative about the pitching depth at AAA, Hagen Danner does seem to be figuring it out a little bit, and he's on the 40-man, so you know maybe he's the next Zach Pop or Brandon Little up who gets a look, but that's not resolving your bullpen either. And, you know, again, I mentioned claiming Mitch White off of waivers earlier, not entirely jokingly. That's where we're at with these things. Okay, let's try to end on a little bit of a positive here. The bullpen, like the start, the bullpen is like the offense in that we can talk about the tweaks at the margins and who hits where and who should get, you know, who should be that eighth starter. You know, David Schneider's playing every day now. That's great. He's been one of their best hitters. But all of that stuff, and all of that stuff matters, but it doesn't matter quite as much as, are your guys going to hit? Are Bo and Vlad, and to a lesser extent Springer, going to hit? That's similar to what we're talking about with the bullpen, with Romano and Swanson and those guys. Vlad did hit on the weekend. He hit a grand slam. It was a better week overall. His OPS is back north of 700. He did have some not great moments over the course of the weekend as well, including swinging at a very bad chase pitch after that grand slam. But let's take the positives where we can. 8-game hitting streak, a big bop with that one. 3 extra base hits over that stretch as well. Are you starting to see it a little bit with Vlad, or am I trying to make this happen because everything else is so negative?
OPS over 700, baby.
What a bar. What a bar to clear.
It looks better. It does with Vladdy. You are seeing the exit velocities actually turn into something, because I'm turning into the old school guy who still wants to see it happen in actual baseball games that count for, you know, wins. But you're seeing it happening in games now, and you're seeing those numbers translate into actual production. And good on Vladdy. The Blue Jays need this. They absolutely do. Having performances from depth players or role players will get you through a game. It'll get you through a week. To get through a season and to do anything of value, you need Vladdy. You need Bo. Goodness, you need Bo. But Vladdy having moments like this, that should have been the story of the day yesterday. Him hitting that grand slam, him having a very good week and turning things around at the plate. There were a couple of those ugly swings. Yeah, you're still going to see some of those. But even the at-bats in between were a bit more competitive. And Vladdy does seem more engaged, I think is the word I'll use at the plate, much more engaged right now. And these guys are frustrated. They are. They understand what's happening. They understand their own kind of mortality with this team, with this group. And I think that's extremely important. And Bo Bichette is another one. I think Bo is the key to all of this. I think Bo is everything in this offense right now. If you get him going back like the 850 OPS hitter he can be, everything changes. The entire shape of the order, the production, what happens behind him, it all changes. Vladdy is one big piece, but he needs some help. He needs some help right now. And this offense is going to have to steal some games. If Manoah's pitching like this and the bullpen's doing that, I know that's not the most optimistic thing in the world, but they are going to have to bounce back. And Sunday was a good example of that. It just got ruined.
Yeah, we're not in the optimist business. We're in the realist business. Hey. So I can't blame you. Bo, by the way, got dropped to fifth in the batting order. Went 1-for-11 with a walk over the weekend. He does not have an extra base hit since April 22nd. That is a stretch of 11 games. Into some of the numbers today. The chase and swing decision stuff is actually better than it usually is, but the quality of contact is just not there. It's been a tough one to diagnose. And you're right. The Jays are going to have to score some runs in a hurry, because the next two teams they'll face are the Philadelphia Phillies, who have the best record in baseball and can obviously the best record in baseball, while some of their guys like Nick Castellanos has one extra base hit on two extra base hits on the season. He's been down bad, a middle of the order hitter for a team that went to the World Series, and they're still the best team in baseball. And then you're going to see the Minnesota Twins, who just had their 12 game winning streak snapped and mash righties like crazy. So it is not getting any easier. Keegan, hope when we talk to you, whatever day we do next week, there is more positive to sift through. hate putting you in the spot to do the Monday morning. Everything was bad on the weekend, but nobody I'd rather sort through it with, pal.
It's my natural state. I'll try to find one good thing for next week. I'll find one and bring it like a class show and tell.
Yeah.
Thanks, Blake.
Hey, here's one good thing for you. There's still Western Conference basketball on after these Jays game ends. So,
God bless. And no baseball tonight. Not a bad thing.
There you go. Keegan Mathison of MLB.com, of BlueJays.com. Make sure you're subscribed to his newsletter in addition to checking out all of his articles there. We're going to take a break. When we come back on the other side, a new guest for us. It's at TJ Stats on Twitter. It's Thomas Nestico. Does a lot of great work with Stuff. He has his own Stuff Plus metric. A lot of really good visuals on Twitter after games, not just for the Blue Jays, but league-wide, helping us better understand, hey, this slider moved that much. What does that tell us? What is that something that we can build off of? We're going to go deep on the Alek Manoah start. We're going to look at some of the bullpen struggles as well. That's next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Tough first segment there. Keegan Mathison, always great, but the Toronto Blue Jays are not in the best of spots here. They lost 11-8 to the Washington Nationals yesterday. Four consecutive series losses. Alek Manoah, the story yesterday, goes four innings in his return to the majors. Seven runs, six of them earned, six hits, four walks, a hit by a pitch, two home runs surrendered, only eight swing and miss. So that's a sub 25% whiff rate. That's a sub 30% called plus swinging strike rate. Those are kind of metrics we look at to see what were the results. Underneath that, we can take a look at how did the pitches look, how did they move, how did they locate, and things like that to kind of zoom out from the frustration of each individual at bat. And yes, you don't need the metrics to tell you a slider that sits flat and is middle and gets hit for a home run was a bad pitch. But it is sometimes helpful to zoom out and be like, hey, he threw 30, 40 sliders. How did they look? On average, how was that slider moving? One of the ways we can do that is a stat called Stuff Plus or TJ Stuff Plus. Our next guest has designed his own version of those, and I find it very, very helpful. He's at TJ Stats on Twitter, patreon.com/TJ_stats. It's Thomas Nestico. He joins us now. Thomas, how are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for doing it. So before we get into some of the specifics of yesterday's start, this is, I know you have like a real job and a real profession as well. But what is your background in terms of, how you've come to design these pitch metrics and what made you want to do a pitching metric in the first place, your own thing rather than using, you know, what might be on a FanGraphs or a Baseball Savant?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I'm a civil engineer by trade. I kind of just love math and sciences my whole life, but I also love sports, watching them, playing them growing up. Again, always watch the Blue Jays, always watch the Leafs. Haven't really seen any success in the playoffs from those ends, but I'm just a huge fan of sports and math and science. I just wanted to blend those together. So even at a young age, I would kind of play around with spreadsheets, looking at different data, even simple stuff, just like average OBP slugging. But as I kind of grew older and learned more through my schooling and just my curiosity as well, I love learning. Kind of want to branch out into kind of my own metric. So I created, again, you mentioned TJ Stuff Plus, kind of a spin on the ever-growing popular Stuff Plus metric. I've created like a decision value metric. I also created my own ex-WOBA metric we kind of see on Baseball Savant. So again, I just wanted to kind of work through it, show my methodology, both because I find it super interesting and hopefully other people as well could kind of take the insight from myself, provide me insight, give me some ask some questions, give me some advice, and also kind of spread kind of analytics and kind of spread it out and help people kind of understand it a bit more, because I believe the blend of the eye test plus analytics can definitely help expand our knowledge of the game and improve in certain aspects, which like one, like you can't only use analytics and you can't only use the eye test, because again, you can't capture everything with either of them. But again, meshing them together definitely adds that layer to help us kind of improve and expand on basically anything in the world, really, but it's very applicable to sports.
Definitely. And I certainly appreciate it. I know your audience on Twitter appreciates it. I reference the stats on this show. It's helpful to have. So when it comes to TJ Stuff Plus, any of these Stuff Plus metrics, for anyone in the audience who doesn't know, what are we trying to capture in that? Obviously, velocity is a component of it. You'd imagine for a fastball, you know, velocity, the spin rate, things like that, for a slider, how much it's breaking. What are we trying to capture when we take these pitches and put them on a scale where 100 is league average, higher's better, lower's worse? So it would, like, I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, we can say, hey, a Stuff Plus of, or a TJ Stuff Plus of 108, that's a, you know, 8 percentage points better than average or whatever. But what is a stuff metric trying to capture from those pitches?
Yeah. So stuff, what my metric and, you know, Sarah's from The Athletic, what they're capturing is the expected run value of a pitch. So when you're looking at a pitch of just a 100, it's kind of the league average pitch. In general, the pitcher always has the upper hand on the batter. So a league average pitcher would perform, I guess, would be, again, it would be league average, but they have the advantage. And as you kind of increase from that 100, it's how many runs basically has that pitcher is expected to prevent from basically the physical characteristics of their pitches. So as you mentioned, something like spin rate, velocity, also the movement of the pitch, it's horizontal movement, it's vertical movement. You can even look deeper into comparing that movement to, say, the pitcher's primary pitch, like how does their slider play off their fastball? And in that case, it could maybe be beneficial, or maybe their slider and fastball don't really mesh well together, and they could look into maybe, say, adding a cutter to help bridge the fastball to their slider and stuff like that. So again, it's kind of quantifying or predicting an expected run value for a pitch.
That's good to know. And yeah, the run value, I think it's on a helpful scale regardless, even if run value doesn't quite yet have a, you know, the way we think of, oh, a 300 average or a 250 average, we all have a benchmark to clock that to. Maybe people don't have that yet for run value, but putting Stuff Plus on a scale where 100 is league average and we can go up and down from there is very, very helpful. So let's get into some specific stuff. Let's talk about Alek Manoah's start yesterday. That's a guy who 2021, when he first comes up to the majors, that slider looks like potentially a wipeout weapon. His really strong 2022, the slider's still pretty solid. You know, a fastball that isn't elite velocity wise, but he made good use of it. Some of the underlying metrics said, hey, in 2022, you know, maybe he's getting a little fortunate, but they certainly wouldn't have suggested he was a sub replacement level pitcher the way it's played out in 2023 and 2024 so far. Yesterday, he makes his major league re-debut, his first time pitching since early August of last year. What did you see in some of the underlying metrics beneath those 7 runs over 4 innings?
Yeah, so when I was looking at his pitch shapes, his velocity seemed to return back to those 2022 levels. So definitely very encouraging thing to see there. Again, the slider had a bit more movement compared to 2023, not to its kind of level of 2022, but kind of like in between there. So looking at his slider was slightly improved from 2023, and getting that velocity back up was definitely interesting and encouraging to see as well. The extension, so kind of the distance he's able to reach before he releases the ball, so that shortens the distance between the release to the plate, was actually up compared to 2022 and 2023 by about half a foot. So again, you kind of want to minimize that distance so the pitch looks faster. So overall, Manoah, the pitch shapes looked a bit better than 2023, and the extra extension should help him in the future.
But it didn't look quite to the level of 2020. And I don't know if you were doing TJ stats back in 2022, but certainly from the Baseball Savant data available, even if it's an uptick from 2023, am I fair to say it's not where it needs to be? Still, you know, like I mentioned this not to be like overly obvious given the outcomes there, but John Schneider did say after the game, hey, the stuff looked as good as he has stuff wise in some time. That stuff, even though it's better than 2023, will still need to be better for him to stick in the rotation, right?
Yeah, for sure. The 2022, the slider was much better, as well as the four seam. Again, the four seam yesterday was a bit flatter. You kind of want to have that increased induced vertical break on your fastball. And the slider in general, the more arm side movement you have, typically would grade out better in pitch models. And he just wasn't at that level yesterday compared to 2022.
So how do we, so the next level here is, you know, where are you locating this? How are you commanding it? I know on Eno's side, there is the stuff side of it and the command side of it to give you kind of a pitch plus. Do you incorporate that as well in your stat, or is that more of a, hey, we've got the quality of the stuff, and then separately we're looking at where it locates?
Yeah, so I don't have a location plus metric or a pitching plus metric. But yeah, I usually what I'm do is look either at the pitch plots, or what I did specifically for Manoah start today, I downloaded every single pitch from yesterday's game and watched them all. And I definitely, the command was not where it should be. It looked kind of worse than last year, which is very surprising and not encouraging at all.
Yeah, that's it's not great. And, you know, he said after the game, hey, I'm not going to be Greg Maddux. You don't have to be Greg Maddux tonight. Like a couple of his walks, there were like not competitive pitches at all. A couple 4-pitch walks, a couple 5-pitch walks. And one of those was, yeah, you got the 3-0 pitch over, but that's it. Certainly going to have to be more around the zone moving forward. Let's move off of Manoah. That'll be interesting to track next start, which we assume will be on the weekend against the Minnesota Twins. Is the stuff a little better? If the stuff is the same, can he locate and execute a little better? The Jays have also had some issues in the bullpen so far this year. They are now 30th in bullpen ERA. I think Eric Swanson is probably the name that most people look at and see, hey, he did a really, really good job suppressing home runs over the first few years of his career, especially with the splitter. The splitter's been taking yard a couple times this year now, a couple extra base hits off of it in addition to the home runs. What are you seeing in Eric Swanson's early struggle here?
Yeah, so the pitch metrics, I guess the movement profile seems to be pretty similar to 2023 and I guess years prior. It's just that location of the splitter is not where you want it. In 2023, you want to keep your splitter kind of low in the zone just due to its break. It kind of drops on the batter, but now he's just leaving it kind of in the center, like in the heart of the zone. And since it's an off-speed pitch, it's not very fast. You're kind of just feeding into the batter's swing path, and they can just take a hit for a home run. He's given up a few this year on it, and last year he was very good at suppressing it. Again, tapping back into that command will definitely be key to him because you can't be leaving splitters in the heart of the zone or basically any pitch. But again, off speed and breaking balls in the middle of the zone are kind of death sentences for pitchers.
Yeah, and to give some context here, and again, it's small sample early on, but your TJ stuff plus metric actually has Swanson's splitter purely in terms of movement and shape and velocity graded better than Kevin Gausman so far this year. And Gausman has obviously had better results. So it's not just about how it breaks and how fast it is. It's about how you use it. Speaking of Gausman, not excited, maybe it's excitement. When you see a guy who's like an established guy start to use a new pitch and it pops up in the data downloads you do, and you're like, hey, is this a real new pitch? Did it get misclassified or whatever? What's that process like for you when you see a guy like Gausman? Hey, there's a two-seamer here now. There's a sinker here. Is that legitimately a pitch? And then investigating what's there with it.
So I read your article on Kevin Gausman's sinker. Very insightful kind of going through that. He kind of had a sinker earlier in his career, kind of ditched it though. But the introduction of a new sinker is actually pretty encouraging because of the way, I guess, how Gausman's two-pitch mix kind of works. His four-seam fastball and his splitter pretty much leaned on that most of last year. But now he's incorporating a sinker. So out of the hand, they kind of all look the same, the sinker, the splitter, the fastball. And the sinker kind of bridges between that fastball and splitter, kind of has similar movement aspects of both. But again, the sinker, as you mentioned, is just kind of like a faster splitter. And the way he's locating the sinker, he's using it exclusively to right-handed hitters and ones that are kind of prone to those inside pitches. An example you laid out was Teoscar Hernandez. So again, locating that sinker, especially since it kind of looks like the splitter coming out of his hand, and I guess pitch tunneling as well plays into that. Definitely is very valuable. It's not gonna be a really good whiff pitch. I won't expect too many strikeouts on it, but it will induce many weak swings and hopefully a lot of ground balls. And that's what it's been doing this year. He's not gonna really throw it in the zone at all. But if batter kind of is sitting on a fastball or the splitter, or they're gonna swing anyways and they make contact with that sinker, it's pretty much gonna be a ground ball, hopefully to one of the infielders, and easy out.
Yeah, that would be the hope. He actually threw more of them on Saturday than I was anticipating. That was a Nationals team that's young. They hadn't seen a lot of splitters. They're not a super disciplined team. I kind of thought he might just go fastball splitter in that one, but we got a good chunk of the new or returned two-seamer as well. So, Thomas, this is great stuff on the pitching side. We can also use something like TJ Stuff Plus to evaluate how good the pitching the Blue Jays have been facing is. And this is not something that is going to make anyone feel good, especially after they only got 3 runs off Patrick Corbin, who has missed fewer bats than basically anyone in baseball so far this year. But we can take a look at, hey, have the Jays faced harder pitching? It's felt like they faced harder pitching. Have they actually? You put that together last week, kind of right as we were talking about it on the show, which I really appreciated. Is that true? Is that backed up? The Jays have faced pretty difficult pitching relative to league average in the early going here?
Yeah, so according to my model, it's looking like the Blue Jays are easily within the top 5 of the toughest pitching faced. I have them ranked 3rd right now. So the Angels and the Rays are above them as well. So the Rays are another team that are struggling very heavily offensively. And again, facing difficult pitching, I guess, compared to league average, it would definitely be kind of a nuisance for batters. Again, it's not all the biggest issues with the Blue Jays offense, but it can definitely attribute to some of it. I actually had one of my followers, he asked me for some just the background data into the model and kind of the inputs of it. And he ran the numbers, and it looks like the Jays are around over the course of a season, just from the pitching they're facing, not including anything, not even like pitch locations or even the opponents, like their offense, they would lose around 4 games per 160 just strictly off the pitching they're facing, just from the TJ Stuff Plus metric, just looking at the pitch movement, which again seems pretty substantial, just looking at that one aspect. It is early, so maybe they've lost 1, possibly 2 games strictly from pitching. But again, kind of compounding both the offensive struggles with the better pitching they're facing, they're very difficult for them to score runs. As we saw, we had a 20 game stretch where they couldn't score more than 5.
Yeah, that's not you probably, even against very elite pitching, shouldn't go 20 games without scoring more than 5 runs, but that is helpful to hear. And that's helpful. You know, big picture context of, hey, what is the difference between this and average? And it's about 4 wins maybe over the course of the season. So that should even out. The Jays will still end up with a slightly more difficult than average schedule. But over these next couple weeks, probably only getting harder because tougher and tougher guys ahead. Thomas, we got about a minute with you left here. This doesn't have to be Blue Jays. This can be organizationally, this can be across baseball. But when you look at your TJ Stuff Plus metric and you think, hey, how are guys talked about league-wide, how are guys rated, things like that. Is there anyone who's kind of, you think, by their pitch metrics is a little under the radar, underrated as an arm we should be talking about more?
So Christopher Sanchez of the Phillies.
Who we're going to see.
I guess some command issues, but he had a really great start against Colorado a few weeks back. Again, it was Colorado, so maybe we're maybe a bit too bullish on that performance there, but his stuff jumps out. It's near the top in my model. He has a wicked changeup and a crazy moving sinker. So yeah, Christopher Sanchez is definitely one pitcher I'm very interested in. Christian Scott, he just made his debut. His stuff kind of improved from his AAA. Maybe he was hyped up from getting his MLB debut, and it's definitely very exciting to see rookies like someone like Jared Jones and even Mason Miller just come to the league and just pretty much absolutely dominate, and kind of their numbers all get backed up by these public metrics and even the basic metrics, just like strikeout rate and walk rate and such.
Christopher Sanchez, who we will see in that Philly series, 97th percentile ground ball rate in the early going here, heavy sinker changeup combination. Thomas, thank you so much for taking the time out, man. Keep up all the great work. And personally, I appreciate you being open to the DM queries and things like that. It means a lot, man.
And thanks for having me on. I had a great time. Go Blue Jays.
All right. Thomas Nestico at TJ Stats on Twitter. You can check out more of his work at patreon.com/TJ_stats. TJ Stuff Plus, his take on Stuff Plus. Some helpful information there on how Alek Manoah looked under the hood. It obviously didn't look very good on the surface. It didn't look good under the hood either. It was maybe a small step forward from where he was at last year, but it's going to be tough to build on that against a Twins team this weekend that mashes righties and just won 12 games in a row. Jays have an off day today to clear their heads, to clear your head. Let's hope they make good use of it because the Phillies are next, and they are tops in baseball. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening to Jays Talk Plus.